All right, guys, this podcast was a little bit different. We actually didn't have Adam with us today. Adam is frolicking around Europe right now in Spain on a boat cruise. So we had Perry come in. Perry is the other owner of Unemployable, and he joined James, Mark, and I on this podcast from Thailand. We started with talking in regards to how hard it is to start a podcast, and Perry took us in behind the scenes a little bit, and so did Mark, because Mark thought, you know what, I'm going to start a podcast as well. He's on the Unemployable podcast, and then you start realizing how difficult it is and why the consistency is the most important thing. We also talked about how using your time wisely is very, very important, especially in this day and age with so much information out there. We then went on to talk about the protests in Australia on August 31st. And Mark was talking about how interesting the media turned on it and made it quite negative. We then rolled into we talked a little bit about Bitcoin and what's happening in Bitcoin, because there's a little bit of a lull. It's about 10% down from its all-time highs. We also talked about making sure you have conviction in regards to what you're investing in. And what conviction means is you have to be educated and you need to believe in what you're investing in. And then we actually had a surprise guest at the end. I didn't even realize he was there, but someone that works with us in behind the scenes at Unemployable that makes all this happen with Perry, joined Perry. He was visiting Thailand and surprised us. Hopefully you guys enjoy it as well as much as we did. But please like, subscribe, and comment. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. But the most important thing you can do for us is press that subscribe button. Can you believe that over 75% of you guys do not subscribe to our podcast yet? You guys are the listeners. The more subscribers that we have, the better guests that we can get on Unemployable, and that will help us greatly. Hope you enjoy the pod. Things look a little bit different this week. Adam has changed. He's a bit whiter this year today. Obviously, we've got Perry joining us. For those of you guys that don't know who Perry is the other owner of Unemployable, who sits in the background most of the time. But today, he said, you know what, Adam, I will show up for you, because Adam is frolicking around Spain. Yeah, anyone that's been following him can see him on the cruise ship, cruising around, basically showing off where he is. And I'm loving every minute of it, because I just see the smile on the guy's face, and I can see that he's just enjoying himself. And he's there with another mate of ours that he's met on the boat and his wife, which is amazing. So, Perry, thanks for joining us. For those of you guys that don't know where Perry lives, he's actually was living in South Korea, and now he's in Thailand. How's actually Thailand, Perry? How is Thailand?
Thailand's amazing, mate. Like, it's just, you know, 30 degree weather every single day. If it rains, it rains for like 20 minutes and then it's just hot again. The beaches are an hour away that way. I've got probably the best shopping centers in the world that way. You know, you don't know where I'm pointing, but I could be pointing anywhere. And there's just good stuff here. And if you want to be a dirty retrobate, you can come here as well and have a great time and be polygamous if you need to.
I think just before we started rolling tape, Mark, who's very worldly and educated and probably could read the thesaurus backwards, didn't know a word called polygamy. So anyway, a new word for the day we're having.
No one had introduced me to that concept, and if someone can get it approved for me, that'd be great.
Perry, I want to, because obviously you're fairly new to the pod, you've come in every once in a while. I want you to explain to the audience, because obviously what the audience gets is a podcast every Tuesday, every Friday, every Saturday, and it's just this automated thing, and it's a video. But I really want people to understand what it takes, and kind of giving them a little bit of an in behind the scenes, I think, in Unemployable Media and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, because I think it would be great for people to understand it.
Jerome, if this isn't in the first, if this is out of the first or in the first 5 minutes, then you're going to have to bleep this out. It's a lot of fucking work. basically, we've got at the moment what three, sometimes four pods a week, and one of the hardest things is just making sure everyone's schedule fits, right? Because there's been enough times where James goes on holiday, or Mark's off not in Byron Bay, Eric, you're in Italy for a month, Adam's frolicking in Spain, going, oh, by the way, do the podcast, please. You know, and I love it, but it's one of those things where getting, we've actually got someone who literally just is booking for us now, right? Because it's a full-time job. You've got what, three editors. Mark, I need to send you over some details on an editor that I think I found for you as well. And this is what I mean. Like, you've got, Mark's got his own podcast, and I'd like to just pull on that thread. You're doing one at the moment. How hard graph is that?
Oh man, I
he's gonna say, mate, it's a walk in the park. What do you want to be?
No. Like, hang on.
It's happening. The Unemployable crew are going to Dubai, and we want you there with us. On October 23rd and 24th of this year, we're gonna be going to Dubai for a two-day event. The first day is all about property. The second day is gonna be all about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. For the first few hours in the morning, we're gonna be doing an in-room event. We're gonna be talking to developers. We're gonna be talking to people from the Dubai government, as well as real estate agents. We're gonna be learning all about the real estate landscape in Dubai. After that, we're gonna be renting a coach bus where we're all gonna be going on the coach bus together, great networking, and we're gonna be going to all the different displays around Dubai and seeing the different infrastructure that they're building. We're then gonna be having dinner that night. Day two is all about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Adam is actually flying in to join us, and he's gonna be there with his trading partners, as well as friends of his that are gonna be talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. After that, we're gonna be having some lunch, and then from there, we're gonna be going to a beach club, and we're just gonna chill. It's gonna be relaxed. It's gonna be a great networking event. It's gonna be very unstructured, and this is where real wealth creation happens, guys. You need to be in these rooms. You gotta rub shoulders with different types of people. There's gonna be people from all over the world joining us there. If you want to be there, register your details at www.unemployable.com.au/Dubai, or click on the link on the top of the comments, register your details there, and hopefully you'll be on the bus and hanging out with us.
I was doing one episode a week, and then I'm like, and then I started the 10K trading challenge where I'm trying to turn 10K into 100K. I'm like, oh, I'll do a second episode, you know, the market wrap. And I got about 2 weeks into that, and I thought, Jesus, it only took 2 weeks to become a slave to the algorithm, trying to go up to two podcasts a week. I haven't even mastered one. And so from going from two podcasts a week, I went backwards, and I've decided one every 2 weeks, because it's wild. It's so much more than just getting on and recording. Like, right? just thinking about what you're going to come on and say takes time. And it's tough yakka, man. Like, you know, and these guys out there that have got 1 million followers and they're dropping videos every day, they make it look easy, right? Mm. You know, like Jordan said, the biggest problem is I made it look easy. It's like these podcasters, Doak and Rogan and all these guys, make it look easy, but it's not, right? It takes a lot of thought and a lot of energy to deliver value. You know, anyone can get on and just spit it and just spray anything, right? But to deliver value week in, week out, and to be considered one of the best and worth people's attention and time listening to when they have so many options today.
Yeah.
It's a huge task. It's a huge task.
I think you hit the nail on the head there about so many options and attention, and we're all busy. We're launching bits and pieces, doing property deals or whatever it may be. And now I find myself really having to go, what podcast, I'm going to watch one a day. Who's it going to be? And I'm going to fit it in my walk. And then other rest, you just start to tune out. It's just so much noise, and a lot of them are good. So which ones, you know, pick your good, I suppose.
James, I can tell you which one it is. It's Unemployable Media. Dirty little plug there. Thank you very much, guys.
James, yeah. you're spot on though, James, because never have I ever had a bigger watch list that I haven't been able to get to. You know how you add them to your watch later list on YouTube? I've never had a bigger watch later list with quality, right? Like world-class quality guests and podcasts, and I just can't get to them all. And I'm trying to work out, do I need to throw the transcripts in ChatGPT? Like, is there a better system to work out which ones to watch and to pay attention to? And it's like, you know, I think that's a serious – that's a serious balancing act for all of our listeners and for us and for everyone out there in the space to try and work out, okay, which ones do we watch? What do we talk about on the ones that we are actually going on and recording? to make sure that it is quality. And it becomes one of everybody's staples that they never miss every week.
It's just a hack. I actually had someone of the friend that is a follow the pod just DM me, and just one of the things I'll drop it again there because it's probably quite pertinent as well. Is what I've been doing. For those who haven't watched that specific pod, this lady reached out. There's a free thing called Tactic, TACTIC or TACTIQ, and you just go and grab the URL. There's probably a few of them out there. It's just one I use. And if I go, right, I know this is going to be good, I just want the bullet points, grab it in there, transcribes in about 2 seconds, drop it in GPT, summarize this, highlighting all the main points of it, and you can drop it in our pod in like and read the notes in about 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Mm. So you can absolutely absorb. Especially if it's content that you're interested in, if it's for business building, if it's for property, if it's for crypto or whatever, where it's not more of a story where they're interviewing, some icon that you really want to listen to them actually speak and get the full immersion. It's a really good hack. And this lady said to me, she says, I'm doing a diploma of applied finance right now, and I'm just grabbing stuff and dumping in Tactic, and it's just unbelievable. The learning has accelerated massively. So it's just another one. We'll throw it in there. It's free for everyone to use, et cetera. But it just certainly speeds up the consumption of quality content if you don't want to get the immersion.
If we could just riff on that for a little bit, right? Like so a real use case that I've got at the moment is I'll read a macro report, and the gist of the report will be, you know, China is restricting rare earth minerals to the US and the rest of the world. They have 90% of the rare earth supply chain. This is bullish for rare earth companies or companies in the US that are mining rare earth minerals, right? But then it's great. It's like, okay, I know that is something that I can make money on. But then the actual work to then go and look at the top 25 rare earth companies in the US or Australia or wherever they are, analyze the charts of each of them, analyze the fundamentals of each of them, and then work out, okay, which one am I going to take action on, has stopped me from doing that, whether it be rare earths, energy, or whatever. So you stick to the things you know. But now with ChatGPT-5, you can basically give the agent that task and say, this is what I'm looking at doing. I want to create a software or a program that helps me rank them, helps me work out which one to buy. And now the software, like ChatGPT, can build that program for you to go out there and to do that task, to do that thing, and to shorten the amount of time to do it. Now, there's this, I guess where I'm going with this is there's this debate about all ChatGPT or all language learning models converging to one, commoditizing, and then like intelligence just being this solid state thing where it's all the same. But I was listening to a podcast recently with Balaji and Peter Diamantis and the guys on his Moonshots podcast. And Balaji was Srinivasa, whatever you say his last name, was basically saying it's not going to work like that, that there's going to be multiple models, AI models. And the smarter that you are as the individual driving the model, the better the output that you're going to get. Because Grok or ChatGPT or none of those things can listen to said podcasts that we're listening to and then go and create an action plan to execute on that information. But us as individuals are going to be able to drive AIs to doing those things. So I was just wondering if you guys have like have had any experience in playing around with the models and creating execution programs rather than just learning programs, because I really think that that's going to be the next frontier, and the way that we get the edge is to actually drive these models into taking real world actions that we can benefit from in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I actually haven't, but I know what you're talking about now. It's like it's and as you see it now, that first wave of, you know, all the Instagram ads of AI, you know, AI appointment setters or whatever, and that was the AI agency model. But now it's actually getting into the agent is the new building AI agents is the new space, and you can start to see them all coming through now. So and how to build your own, and that's the new wave of Spruik is selling courses on how to build all your own AI agents to actually implement what you're talking about.
Yeah. And on that note, so I'm sure you guys, I don't know if you're a Mac or if you're PC, but with Copilot, which is the PC version, it uses your browser instead of using within the channel. So like with ChatGPT, you have to use APIs, right? But with Copilot, it actually takes control of your mouse and you can then go, hey, I want you to do these sort of tasks. And then it can repeat those tasks for you. So you're able to actually start using it, as you're saying, in an execution basis of literally going, I want you to go through tab A to tab B. You go onto this other page here, website. I want you to write the comment here. And the thing that changed, this is why this is a game changer, because now you're not going into the back end of these systems. You're actually being seen as a human by the computers, right? So it could see a button that just says, are you a robot? And it goes, well, yeah, I am, but they won't know. And it will be able to click it as a browser, right? So what the implications and the benefits of this is, at what point do you need admin? Like if you can literally just do the task once and it uses its intelligence to just do that task over and over again when you're asleep, you know?
Yeah, like you're not, and I haven't got the figures at my desktop at the moment, but basically I think it was age 14 to 24 or something like that. It was definitely entry level age in the USA that it's the first time that the unemployment rate has risen to 6.5% in that age bracket outside of a recession. And so they're to your point, Perry, they're the jobs that are getting impacted first. It's those associate or intern roles that are getting impacted first, or even the people that are straight out of university, that they're finding it more difficult to get a job because now ChatGPT 5 has an IQ of 148, which is probably higher than the four of us.
Right. Well, I mean, so if you look at not even just those entry level jobs, paralegal, like they're gone. I mean, I've got three YouTube. I watch a YouTube channel as a lawyer.
They're not being affected yet. It's not showing up in the data yet.
Correct. And I'll give you a real world example. We're dealing with a lawyer, Andrew, Eric, just for one of our businesses to review some contracts and whatnot. Took him for lunch and he said, look, one of the agreements you want us to really look at has got payroll tax implications and et cetera. You need a specialist on that. But he said, for your entry level agreement, contract service agreement, he said, do it in GPT or you'll be paying my team $600 an hour to do it. It'll be done in GPT. Like that was him at lunch. He said, honestly, just do it. It'll be as bulletproof as we're going to get it or good enough to get you out of trouble. But the other one will probably use GPT, but it's going to need specialists because it's got nuances. So, I mean, there's a lawyer telling me to go and use GPT and because he's made an introduction through Eric, whereas paralegals probably would have done that in the past.
Yes. But I think the point that I'm trying to make as well is, I didn't try and make that point before, but I'm trying to make it now, is that I think the displacement of work, like, so I just went and said that interns can't get a job, right? But I'm going to contradict myself now. And I'm going to say that I don't think the displacement of workers is going to be as bad as people assume it will be because all the doctors are going to use ChatGPT and all the lawyers are going to use ChatGPT. They're going to be using these programs. So then what other tasks do they then have more time to work on because they're not preparing a basic legal agreement that you need for payroll tax or whatnot? So it raises everybody's level because we're all going to be able to deal with much better tasks. So for example, the medical space, right? Instead of dealing with the common cold or what's this rash on my arm, you know, your GP might start becoming your anti-aging god who helps you live an extra 30 years because you go to see him and he puts your blood work through an AI that then gives you a protocol that allows you to live another 10 years. Do you know what I'm getting at, right? Like We especially people watching this show, which is an entrepreneurial show, need to stop using ChatGPT like Google and start using it to execute, right? Because I think we haven't even hit the tip of the iceberg at the execution possibilities with these models. And the big point that I wanted to get across is don't assume that because you've got Grok or you've got ChatGPT that you're just going to be as smart as someone else using Grok or ChatGPT. Yeah. It shit in, shit out, right? Like learning how to manipulate these models and make these agents work for you is going to determine how far you can take it. But I don't hear a lot of people talking about that yet.
Well, this is what I was trying to allude to about the new flavor is you're getting people going about how to build a one-man consultancy company that goes into businesses that, you know, the business owner is too busy to learn how to build these agents. As if you're half smart, you spend a weekend learning how to build agents and market yourself and go into companies like Eric's too busy to do something. You're too busy to go and learn agents. But if you had someone and it could build that agent for you and they charge you $2,000 and $199 a month implementation fee, I mean, that's the next wave of things, building these
companies. I don't think so.
Well,
I don't, I have to push back on that, right? Because the problem is going to be that you're not building a business doing that. That's on the fringe edge of what's possible. These models, these language learning models, are going to have the agents inbuilt that are going to do it all for you. You're going to just type the button. You're going to say, create me a program using Python or whatever it is, and make it assess buying opportunities, selling opportunities, etc., and build it for me in an interface that I can use and quicker. The models are going to do all that for you, right? Just so going out there and creating a business that is creating agents is going to be disrupted so fast.
The thing that's stopping that though, and the thing that is stopping that is the laziness of human beings. In that most people have now just gotten comfortable with ChatGPT, right?
I don't agree. Most people aren't. I still don't think most people. I think most people still aren't even using ChatGPT.
I agree.
I think we use ChatGPT. Most people don't even know about Bitcoin yet. Like this is the crazy thing. What happens is we're living in a world where we're surrounding ourselves with people that know a lot of the same things, and we're like Whisper Flow. Right, I'm gonna mention WhisperFlow on here. WhisperFlow. Most people will not know what this is. We know what this is. I use WhisperFlow. I'm not sure if you use it, Mark, but I know James, and Perry is using it. It's life changing.
You don't type life changing,
right? So basically, look up WhisperFlow. You're basically using your function button. You're pressing your function button, talking to it, and it automatically creates the email for you. It is ridiculous. Like, rather than going and, you know, typing up the email, backspace, this, that. But the reality is most people aren't using these things. Like, I'm not using ChatGPT nowhere near the level that you guys are, James and Mark and Perry. Nowhere near. I'm kind of like old school, you know, non-techie kind of guy, right? When I hear about these, I'm waiting for these ChatGPTs to come out that I could just say, hey, please create this, because I'm not the guy that's going to go in there and start ripping things out and understanding it, because that's not how my brain works. Your brain works like that, Mark. James's brain works like that, right? Most people's brains don't work like that. And in my opinion, most people are like, I'm using ChatGPT, but I'm using it at a very, very, very surface level. Like when I'm using it, even the information that I'm putting in it, right? The more that I just adjust it a little bit and then I get the output, the better the input. I'm just like, this thing's unbelievable. And I'm just scraping the surface. But I think what people need to start thinking about is embracing the technology. And I'm going to give you an example. I've got it down. I'm hiring a very, very high-end EA from overseas. Okay. So it's not $1,000 a month. It's not $1,200 a month. It's going to cost, you know, $3,000 a month, give or take, which is a lot of money overseas, right, in the Philippines. So it's a top level. Two out of the three in their Loom video and in their CV and whatnot are talking about how they're already using AI, right, for efficiencies in their everyday work and everyday tasks. I was like, wow. Right. I need to talk to these two first. Right. Just because they had that in there. I don't even know what it means in regards to what they're doing, but I think it's a bit deeper than just ChatGPT. Again, some people are a lot more switched on than AI. Talking about it is one thing, but actually implementing it in your everyday life is something that is confusing to a lot of people still. Like, it is an overwhelming topic, which I agree with you, Mark.
will change quite quickly over time. But I'm still with you, James. There's still, I'm not saying this is a business that you're going to go out and, you know, it's going to be a 10-year business that you're then going to go and sell it at a 10 times multiple. But I still think there is legs if there is someone that was half smart to say, hey, Eric, do you want me to implement this, this, and this? And it's going to cost you, you know, $5,000. And I'd probably be like, yeah, you know, at the moment. Right. But I agree with you, Mark, moving forward, that will all become obsolete.
You're better off though solving a problem for a business owner. So for example, I think I've spoken about this before, we're trying to launch off Amazon, and we've done $17,000 worth of sales in 6 months. So very slow going. But if someone was able to come into my business and they were able to collect data, put all that data into a model, and then that model then goes and says, this is where it's breaking down. Your traffic costs are too high. Here's what you need to do. Stop spending money on CRO because you're not even getting enough traffic. And if you go out there and you can kind of use the AI to create that model, a lot of businesses would have that same problem that I'm having. And then you can go out to businesses and charge $9,000 to kind of implement a plan for them, right? And so there's a lot of roles where I think you can create models that then you go into business who need that problem solved and you solve that problem for them, but you don't give them your model.
Yeah.
You're right. Because it's likely to be disrupted, and you always need to be disrupting yourself and creating better models along the journey. But
the thing is though, and I agree with you, but I it still kind of sticks in my mind about the missed boat effect, right? Where you can say that you really want people to do this sort of thing, but again, most people already in this mindset that everyone already knows ChatGPT. Any idea I have, I've missed the boat, right? Bitcoin, I've missed the boat, right? And so you're literally saying right now, if someone came to you with a solid model that could basically show you, simulate what you've already put, pull the data.
Perry, your internet's cutting out very badly.
Anyway, while that's going on.
Let's have a chat about these protests. I know let's change a little bit off topic around the AI. Obviously, AI, to wrap up that AI chat, is something that we all need to implement, as scary as it is. And I don't understand it. It's probably not good enough anymore. And if you guys get one thing out of AI in this conversation, download Whisperflow, WISTRFLOW.
As for missing the boat, to Perry's point, nowhere near missing the boat, right? Like this is like the second pitch of the first innings. That's how early we are on all of this. All right. And including Bitcoin, because at the end of the day, when these agents start interacting and creating economies with one another, these AI agents, they're going to be using decentralized currencies and things like that, right? Like that. Yeah, we are nowhere near early, nowhere near late. I mean,
now, Mark, I seen you do a post about these protests that happened over the weekend. My wife actually shared your post, and I read it, and I was like, that's a pretty good stance, to be honest with you. So for those of you guys that don't know, it was August 31st. There was protests, marches for Australia, across Australia. And so, Mark, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, going back to the pandemic, I was quite disgruntled with like the stuff that I was seeing with relation to lockdowns, forced mandates, all that kind of stuff. And I was quite vocal at the time. And what I learned from that experience is that it doesn't necessarily pay to be vocal about these things, because you're still in such a minority to have these kind of views and opinions, and you get shut down pretty quickly. So I haven't really had much to do with any of the protests or the, you know, other than the political candidate senators and things that we've had on the show. I don't even really focus on politics anymore. But one thing that was a bit frustrating for me is I woke up on the 1st, so the day after the 31st protests, and basically every post or news article that I saw from our politicians was condemning all the protesters. And, you know, some went as far as labeling everyone who attended the March for Australia protesters as Nazis, right? Because there was some neo-Nazis that tried to crash the protests and things like that. And I was disappointed. I woke up and I was looking at that and I was kind of disappointed because I'm looking at the images, and the images are full of everyday Australians marching with the Australian flag that I know and love. And it looked like most of them, right, were marching peacefully. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago you had the march on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which I have, we spoke about that. And in the end I was in agreement that I thought it was great that they had the ability to march. And you could even argue that the cause is a global movement and cause that deserves attention, and awesome, all power to you for marching either protest. But the one thing that was disappointed is we had the Sydney Harbour Bridge march where you had a bunch of flags from another country. And I felt that march was largely celebrated in the media, other than maybe Sky News, and by the politicians. And then you had a march full of our country's flags that was largely being condemned by all the politicians. And I just felt like, you know, what's wrong with this picture when there is thousands and thousands of people with an Australian flag being condemned by the leaders of state? You know, what is going on? What's actually going on here? And I think it was a little bit disappointed to see. And yeah, there was some fringe clowns that decided to crash these protests. But at the Sydney Harbour Bridge march, I think the same thing occurred, right? And what I'm getting really frustrated with is how everyone is always trying to communicate at the extremes, right? Like our politicians are trying to communicate at the extremes. People on social media are trying to communicate at the extremes. It's like the majority of people at that march, like, and maybe the reason I was getting disappointed is because so many of my followers were actually at that march, and I see them with their families and with their kids posting stories, and they are normal, everyday people, like loving people, everyday people that don't commit crimes and things like that, as far as my knowledge is. And they're getting labeled as Nazis and getting condemned with the small minority that might have gone through and ruined it for everyone. And I was just a bit frustrated about it all. I'm just like, geez, if these guys here that we vote into power don't have our backs, well, who has our backs? And what is the deeper agenda behind all of this, and what's really going on? And, you know, I'll let you guys chime in and say what you think. But, you know, I've got deeper thoughts on you know, whether marching is even worthwhile in the end. But I'll let you guys weigh in and tell me what you guys thought.
But all brand new to me. I went off the grid for about 5 days and haven't looked at a thing. So it's interesting to hear it all unfold. And the biases, obviously, from the government. interesting.
Well, like, I look at it from a media standpoint, right? And, like, all you got to do is open up news.com and look at the articles, right? And one of them right now is saying, you know, that a single photo from an anti-immigration rally captures a grim escalation that should terrify every Australian. Like, these are the word, terrify every Australian. These are the words that the media is using in these types of articles, right? And then, but the problem is for the, you know, call it a bigger population, you know, whether there was neo-Nazis there, whether there wasn't, you know, is then you got one guy, this, you know, this Desi Freeman guy that's on the loose. There's a manhunt with this guy. He's killed already two cops or two, I think the two police officers of Victoria and the Bush. And then on here, you know, Desi Freeman poster, man arrested. And you got one guy at the rally holding up a Desi Freeman poster, which is the wrong thing to do, right? Like, but of course, he was probably the, you know, one of the only ones that would do something stupid like that.
but that's the only thing that's all over the news. I haven't seen one photo of families and kids, you know, walking around and, you know, cheering and the rest of it. It's all these, they make them look like aliens, right? Like the neo-Nazis, you know, with all their shaved heads and wearing all black. And then you see, that's what you see. And all I am seeing is division. One word, division, right? You're on either this side of the fence or you're on that side of the fence. And that's risky, in my opinion, for any country to have so much division. Like, look at the U.S. as an example and the amount of division that is in the U.S. and look where that has gotten the U.S. over the years. Like, do you remember that they ransacked the White House and they were sitting, you know, they were sitting on the office, you know, with all their, you know, guns and this and that. Like the division is so, so extreme there. And in my opinion, in Australia and Canada as well, being from there, is the division is just increasing so heavily in these countries as well, which, in my opinion, never used to be as bad. And I think the media is not helping it whatsoever as well.
And the thing is, like, Mark, to your point, and I'll please take this the right way, because I'm with you. I'm not political at all. And it's not like you're saying, well, I just can't bother marching and I'm putting my head in the sand and I'm just going to go and buy Bitcoin and just let them knuckle it out. Oh, but every politician we've had on the podcast, and I've asked them direct question, what's your solution? And we've had fuck all, really, from them of anything that's going to have any major resolve. Like where's it end? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's been no profound ideas or any action because we're locked up with two parties, right? So, and it's a fairly corrupt system from what I'm learning as we interview all these politicians to start with. So, I mean, you know, I'm not asking for an answer here. Where's it end and what's it look like? But it's certainly, you know, when you've got smart people like yourself, it's going, come out.
So there's just to pull on that thread for you, that you mentioned before, though, Mark, is that, you know, and I've said this on the pod beforehand, is that we are currently in a time where the progressive left have become a friendly fascist themselves. I mean, in the sense of, you know, trust what we tell you to trust or, you know, you're wrong. And it's the same thing with their labels that they're putting on anyone who's protesting for freedom of speech or the opportunity to you know, the opportunity to go on that bridge and do that. And then being told that they're racist or Nazis is like, well, hold on a second. All they're doing is just trying to get a sense of their country or their sovereignty back, right? Like that's what a lot of these people are. Yes, the unfortunate thing is when you do get a majority of people there, you're always going to get radicals of both sides, right? But painting everyone with a far right label, what does that do? It immediately puts into people's mind dangerous. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, did you notice that when I was referring to the Sydney Harbour Bridge protest that I didn't mention what the protest was about and I didn't mention the radicals that turned up at the protest? Because that's largely irrelevant, right? The 99% of the people were there for a good cause, right? And so why should we deal and talk in extremes and talk at each other and past each other? And, you know, I had people that I've known a long time that were sending me things in my DMs. It's like, stop sending me things in my DMs about the most extreme parts of
crazy stuff.
Like I can't
have it. It's because they see it on the media. They see it on the media. I've seen it on the media, right? And that's the thing. That's the only way they know that it's there is because the media, if you're not there, you wouldn't know any other way. But it's because the media, right, representative is there, and that's what they put front page.
Lecturing me about now having 12,000 followers and that I have a responsibility with power. And so, like, are you kidding me? And so, look, my final view on all this from a position of power, like, I don't see that at all. But if I do have any influence or any sway over anyone that is watching the pod or who follows me on social, my final take on it would be this, right? I'll read from something that I prepared and posted onto my Insta. But protesting politics is often futile because the system itself, fiat money, credit expansion, inflation, is what creates the problems. Protests try to treat the symptoms, bad policies, corruption, inequality, immigration, but the root cause remains. Bitcoin, on the other hand, offers a systemic alternative. Instead of fighting on the streets or trying to convince politicians, you can opt out of the broken system by choosing Bitcoin. It's peaceful, and it's a form of protest that doesn't rely on permission, lobbying, or political reform. The end. Right? And that's how I will choose to protest, because that's the way that I think I can have the biggest impact. It's the way that I can not get triggered and not get dragged down in the mire of all these debates and issues that you know, it was enough back through the pandemic, and I didn't come out of that unscathed. So
it woke up a lot of people, you know.
Yeah, but it took its toll on me by trying to fight that fight. And so, you know, maybe my advice is, if every time there's a March for Australia march out there, you're going to get destroyed by the progressive left or the mainstream media or politicians, maybe there's another way that's a little bit smarter and a little bit more silent. And so that's the thing that I would like to leave people with.
I completely agree on that. At the same time, I am heading to England for the 13th of September march. Tommy Robinson. But the thing is, like, you know, the very second I say, oh, I'm going to this, I've had people message me going, so I didn't know that you were far right. And I'm like, how did those two coincide? You know, like but I understand where people are getting those ideas and where those views, because again, you look at the media, what is it telling you? If you literally type in his name, the first four or five news outlets will say far right activist. Mm. How can you think anything differently about an individual if that's all you see from Yahoo News, from BBC News, from whatever news article? There's only so much before you go, hey, I think that guy's a racist. Must be, right? Just because the brain tells you that. So,
lucky Adam's been doing weights, mate. He can be your bodyguard while you're over there, right?
Yeah,
well, that's mate. Really what Adam's out there. Adam's out there getting jacked. He's not really on a boat. He's trying to
absolutely
just prepping for the
Tommy Robinson march. Yeah,
but it is.
You guys have got like backstage and everything, right?
Oh yeah. So we'll be heading there and then get on stage. There's going to be some big names there. Hopefully, Jordan Peterson is potentially going to be there. So the goal is to try and get him on the pod. That's really the game. Wow. You know,
well, Elon Musk has been retweeting, reposting Tommy Robinson, and there's a bunch of podcasts out there that have been like appealing to get Elon on the pod. And Elon then puts it back to his ex-followers and says, should I go on this pod? So, you know, in a little while, I don't think anybody is going to be out of reach for Unemployable Media. You know, you just got to get that follow account up a little bit more. So if you are watching and the algorithm has helped find us and you haven't subscribed, please subscribe, because it just helps the cause. And, you know, maybe we can do some of the dirty work for you so you don't have to go to a protest and...
Yeah, just come buy Bitcoin.
Just come buy it.
Here's my referral code. I'll see you at the bar.
It's actually a festival they're calling it, aren't they, Perry?
Yeah, it's a very family-friendly focus. And I think there was a video from Tommy basically saying, you know, don't come here, you know, trying to incite violence and stuff like that. Because, again, you get the people who are fatigued. And are angry, and then you get people that are just there because they want to have a rough up and they want to cause problems, and unfortunately they get lumped. They're lumped on both sides, and they're the ones that cause the problems for everyone else. Because you know, you look on the progressive left and you see all these people that are very against anyone change, you know, just very liberal. They don't understand why people, you know, look at the right, and they all look like idiots. But there's a lot of very smart individuals, you know, so.
One more piece of life advice, not financial advice, but life advice. You know, have more kids, right? Like if you're, I won't use labels, but have more kids, because you know, I did the math with ChatGPT on the Western population based on birth rates and things like that, and versus birth rates of Muslim countries, African countries, Asian countries, etc. in 50 to 100 years, we're only going to be something like 10% of the population. And so, you know, really, instead of focusing on these crazy things, go out there, have kids, build a family, focus on good, conservative, valued things, and mind your own business to a certain extent. But also be resigned to the fact that you might not be in Australia. Like, you might have to do it somewhere else, maybe. And, you know, maybe that's why Elon needs to get us to Mars ASAP, because that might be the only place left for the West at some point, right? Mars is the only way we survive, like on the Foundation series or something. But no, like the math is kind of, it's not really in our favor either.
It hasn't been for a long time, but this is where we're at. Like, in my opinion, it's just, I think, you know, the genie's out of the bottle and you can't put it back in. Like, it's just, in my opinion, you know, the birth rates are so low, and they will continue to be low because the you know, the cost of living crisis and cost of housing. How many people have I spoken to that have been like, why would I want to bring a kid into this world? Like, that is so sad, man. That one comment really upsets me. How someone can feel that the world is that bad that they wouldn't want to bring another human being in it, right? Like, and this is the mentality.
No, but that's propaganda, Eric. That's propaganda.
It is propaganda.
That's, that's crazy leftist propaganda that people are then buying into.
It is, but propaganda, exactly. The issue is they're buying into it because they're actually basing their decision off of that, right? Not off their own research, just off what they are hearing. And this is why it's very important that there's always two sides to a story and the truth in the middle, right? That's the reality.
Can I share something with you guys that is somewhat exciting but also somewhat scary? So on the 21st of August, Elon Musk posted that artificial intelligence is obviously going to one-shot the human limbic system, and suggested that AI might actually raise birth rates by influencing the part of the brain responsible for emotions, which governs motivation, desire, and social behavior. The guy's going to program it into his AI to have more kids. Like, that's fucking...
So that's the brave new world, isn't it? The brave new world. So you've got the 1984 dystopian future where everything is Big Brother, right? And then you've got the book Brave New World, which is they are going to give you happy pills and chemicals into your body, which basically make you always want to have and have kids, and you live in this limbo of just chasing happiness. So what do people actually want? And, you know, is it just in a pill, really?
Sure, might have got a dose of those from the doctor a little while back.
That was meth.
I mean, sorry to get all philosophical here, but everyone out there that loves Adam's cold hard facts and numbers and statistics probably like, get the guy back. But we're going all kinds of places. But that's a good point, right? Like, in the future, like, I've heard Sam Altman and some powerful people in the AI space say things like, our best chance as human civilization will probably makes most sense to pair with the AI, right? To become some form of human/AI, right? That's our best chance of survival. So fuck knows. But you know, it all comes down. Are you an optimist? Are you a pessimist? Because I look at everything that's happening, and most days I'm kind of like, I am so happy that I am alive in this era, because I think the future is going to be so much greater than what it is now. And I'm just so lucky and grateful that I'm alive at the forefront of all of this. Like, this is epic. And my base case is that we're going through a fourth turning, you know, that 20-year cycle in a 100-year cycle that is crisis. And that, you know, in 2030, 2035, we'll have moved through this crisis period and we'll be in the first turning, which is the high, and that everything will be optimistic and there'll be more productivity and the world will look a lot different than what it is today, or at least the way we perceive it will be a lot different because we're in that first turning. So, you know, have a bit of faith as well. I think it's not all bad.
The numbers are going to drop down, mate. People don't like positivity on this pod, mate. Yeah. Throw in a couple of negatives there.
Man, and, yeah, we're turning to mainstream media. Keep it negative. Fuck.
March! we know that from the thumbnails. The worse the thumbnail, the better the pod.
Yeah, how many times I've said to Stewie, mate, I don't know about that. I don't know about that headline. He's like, oh, it's converting at 14.6 CTR. And I'm like,
oh,
all right.
Now, we do try like two or three now, right? And we put positive ones in there. They die. Yeah. They die the good death. Like, so yeah, we take on what you're saying. We'll try even happier ones and see what happens as well.
Yeah. Mark, speaking of positivity, what is happening with Bitcoin? What is happening with Ethereum? Can you give me some positivity? Because a lot of people have been a lot of people quiet lately around, you know, Bitcoin and what's going on. And I just seen a thing come out today at gold and silver soaring. What's going on?
And I'll put a caveat on that. Eric and I were chatting back and forth. I think, I think Eric might have taken a position last week. That's why he's asking, instead of rubbing the gold microphone. Fucking, is it going to pump?
I actually haven't yet.
Come on. Pull the trigger.
I'm
pressing that many triggers at the moment. I don't even know which one I'm pressing, man.
I mean, look, aren't we only, I think we're only like 10% off all-time highs. Right, for Bitcoin and Ethereum, we're only like 10% off all time highs, and the all time high wasn't made that long ago. So I think everybody is in this instant gratification, living in this instant gratification world, where they want it to go up and they want it to go up now. Especially if you just put your whole super into it last month, right? Like there's a lot of people out there that I know that have taken their super and put it into Bitcoin and
MA of mine did it. SMSF. I'm telling you, I remember driving. I'm driving to Brisbane with him. I'm like, whatever you do, dollar cost average. In my opinion, just dollar cost average it. Nah, man, I don't do one hit. I just want to get it done. It doesn't matter if it goes up and down. I'm in it for the long term, right? I message him. I'm messaging him on the weekend. Hey, bro. I bet he probably wanted to do dollar cost average. He's like, and then he's like, yeah, but that's easy to say. If it went the other way, we wouldn't be having this conversation, would we?
Straight fucking gambling mindset.
Right? Yeah, and I'm like,
you might just go to the casino, put all the red.
And I'm like, that's not the right mindset. I know you're in it for the long term, but like dollar cost averaging is a real thing. As an example, this is what I was just talking about off camera. But you guys, whoever's listening, do whatever you want. But it's just funny because I just literally took this screenshot of the heartbeat, you know what I mean, and sent it through to him. So, but yeah, it's true. It's only 10% off all time highs. I can give some high level
views, right? Like you guys, I think follow my 10K challenge, and you see my daily updates, my macro updates when I make a trade. And I've been saying for a couple of months now that there might be this period of indigestion or this period of chop, a little bit of seasonality, summer in the US, a lot of the funds are away. Seasonally, this is usually a weaker time. September is usually a weaker time for Bitcoin, Ethereum, things like that. You know, you've got some things going on in the world. You've got gold prices skyrocketing. You got S&P, you got stocks at all-time high. Everything's at all-time highs, right? You got the Fed about to cut interest rates into all-time highs. From a zoomed out long-term perspective, I'm still pretty bullish into 2026, especially into the end of the year. I think there's going to be a little bit of indigestion now in September. You know, we might go back and test, you know, and this is not a prediction, but I wouldn't surprise me if we went back and tested 105 or 95K on Bitcoin. I think that's fine. That's healthy. The more that we go back and test these levels and then continue and not crash through them down, but the more that we test these levels and then go back up, in my opinion, the longer the bull market will go. So the quicker that it goes up, if we go to 150 tomorrow, the closer we are to the bull market being over. So having the market do its thing and retest certain levels, I think is healthy, and it extends the bull market. I feel like that 75K mark will be tested again. Now, I don't necessarily think it'd be tested again now. It might. Small chance. Could be next year. Could be end of next year. I think eventually, whether we go to 150, 200, I think we come back and we test that 75, because there's a lot of supply. There's a lot of people that kind of, I won't go into detail, but I think the math suggests that we could go back and test that there. So my advice is, if we shoot up, if you want to invest now, like whatever, do your thing. But if we shoot up to 250, that's not the time to be investing. That's the time to be sitting it out, right, and kind of waiting for the next correction, 30%, whatever it may be. But I think the end of the year, October, November, December, are going to be positive. So, you know, in my opinion, I'm almost fully positioned on everything, like Bitcoin and Bitcoin treasuries. I'm pretty much fully positioned. I'm not going to sell or try to trade around it. I'm trading around Ethereum because Ethereum's a trade for me. You know, we could go back and retest 3.8, 4K Ethereum. Then I think we go a little bit higher. But who knows, right? Like to Eric's point, you have to have a strategy that you're comfortable with no matter what happens. You have to plan for all outcomes. 75K is a level that I would like to, you know, back up the truck or really like go in a big DCA at that level. But at these levels, it's kind of you're in no man's land and, you know, just keep adding and see how you go, whatever. Like, but yeah, I think long-term the bull case for gold, the bull case for Bitcoin, because of all this shit that's going on in the world at the moment, inflation, money printing, credit.
Yeah. Again, obviously Mark's well-versed in so is Adam, obviously, with the Bitcoin side of things, but it's amazing some conviction that people have. Like I was listening to the podcast that Adam did with Matt Fraser, mm-hmm. and he's literally selling properties, selling his car collection, selling everything and putting it all into Bitcoin. And the conviction is that conviction is real, right? When you're mm-hmm. going, I'm all in one asset, I'm selling everything.
Let's talk about that, right?
His terminology was I'm dematerializing. If it's not bolted down, it's getting sold.
Let's talk about that. So I first bought Bitcoin in 2017 for $1,000, right? And then I bought it again. I would say I bought it in size when it was about 12,000 US, right? And so even at 1,000, it goes to 100,000, it's 100X. At 10,000, it goes to 1,000,000, it's 100X. It's now 100,000. Let's say there's a good 10X in it, right? I think there's a 10X in it. I think it'll go to $1,000,000. But it is in a sense, I also think that the easy money in Bitcoin has been made. So if you're and what I mean by that is, okay, if you're Adam or if you're Matt Fraser and you have a net worth of whatever, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, you want to be putting a fair chunk of that in gold or Bitcoin, because your goal is going to be to preserve your capital. So when Adam or Matt Fraser, who I know is fairly wealthy, when they put a large percentage of the net wealth in Bitcoin and you call it over $10 million net wealth, it makes sense because what they're trying to do is preserve their purchasing power. They don't want it to be debased with fiat. But a lot of people who have got $50,000 in the bank hear that and think, oh, I'm going to put all my $50,000 into Bitcoin. But maybe for that person, Bitcoin is not the best. You know, maybe a 10X, which is only 500K, isn't the best choice. Like maybe for that person who's just starting out, you're in your 20s or 30s, sure, save in Bitcoin. But you really want to be going out there and learning other methods of investment, how to use AI, like we've spoken about, how to create value from property because you can use leverage, or even in my space, options. You know, the fastest way, and I'm trying to prove that with the 10K challenge, the fastest way to kind of grow your capital base quickly is options theory, using options and markets. So, you know, I think everybody needs to kind of have a really good think about where they are in their life cycle, in their wealth cycle. Hearing Adam or Matt Fraser put it all into Bitcoin doesn't necessarily mean that putting it all into Bitcoin is the right thing for you. And so we really have to think about this a little bit more and look into, well, what's right for me and my wealth and my risk profile where I'm at, you know, Mark, like
what's your thoughts on people maybe transferring their wealth into like using USDT instead, right? And then having that as their, because you've got a lot of these like Visa cards and cards that can actually take USDT straight and to US dollar. Now I know that you're still, it's basically tethered to US dollar, so it is depreciating, but we're still talking about something which allows you to move it into different cryptos or get protection over it in Bitcoin and stuff as a faster rate. It's just, you know, and I know quite a few people now are probably getting paid in these different coins, which are tethered to the US dollar, and just wondering what you would do and if that's something you would do.
Look, no. And so let me kind of give some context. If you're in Egypt, or if you're in Argentina, or if you're in a place that has a really high inflation rate, then it might make some really, really good sense to start diversifying out of your local currency into US dollars or USDT tether, because you're not going to suffer as high of an inflation rate. But if you're in a country like Australia or the UK or the Euro, I don't necessarily think putting money into the USDT is the best option because of the macro forces and the things that are going on at the moment, the shift towards gold and Bitcoin. I feel like, and I mean, in dollar value, the US debt is worse than any other country in the world, right? Mm. From a current account basis. So I think that the US dollar probably needs to get a little bit weaker. And so if you're in the UK and you're transferring your money to USDT, you're taking on a currency risk of the US dollar, right? If it's saving in Bitcoin, for example, like put your $1 million net wealth in Bitcoin and then spending in USDT, well, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Right. Spending in the stable coin makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be saving in USDT.
No, but you'd be using it as potentially the spending currency, right? And yes. Then Bitcoin is basically the same. Yeah, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, you sort of mentioned that, Mark, about other different the times in your wealth accumulation. You know, we can switch over to Dubai property that's done 2,600% and the Palm Jumeirah over the last 20 years, and they're pulling 15-18%. Well, you know, if you can lever into that, I mean, it's probably going to be probably a better wealth creation strategy for someone who's a bit younger, and then pile it over into Bitcoin later on. So actually, how is that going, guys? Because I know you guys have just launched the Dubai trip. What's that all? How's it all cranking along?
It just got released, I think. We released it at 10 o'clock and we've already got 10 sales.
Yeah, I think more than that now.
More, I haven't looked, so I think there's more, but that doesn't include the people that we already know that are coming as well, and we haven't advertised it on all channels yet. So I reckon we'll get a pretty good turnout, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that'd be great, great
trip. Yeah, yeah. So we've got 10, you know, 11, I believe.
Yeah. So
plus, yeah.
But again, it's all about taking that action, right? We can sit here and talk about Bitcoin. We can talk about property. We can talk about this. We can talk about that. But the key is that you have to have the conviction in something and grow your money in whatever you're comfortable with. Like, I like diversification. I've been like that with businesses, right? I don't just have one business. I have multiple businesses. And I like that because it diversifies myself with risk, right? When one business goes up, the other one could go down. And I get to see kind of what's happening in the economy from multiple fronts, right? From real estate business to holiday business to, you know, health food business to online business, and now what we're doing with Unemployable. And I feel like, you know, you can wear different hats and you can see different things, whereas with other people, they like to go all in on one thing. Like, you look at Matt Frazier, an example, and he's got massive conviction for Bitcoin, which is great, because obviously he would have done quite well with that at some point. But what you guys have to remember is, you know, he's had a business that has been producing cash flow for him to do that, right? And this is what people forget, right? So if you're, and it depends on what season you're in, like Mark said earlier, right? You need to be strategic on your investment decisions, going, you know, are you in growth phase right now?
right? Like, do you have $100,000 in the bank? If Bitcoin does go 10 times and that turns that $100,000 to $1,000,000, that's not life-changing money. It might seem like life-changing money right now, but let me tell you, it's not life-changing money. And I agree with Mark, right? When he's going, you know, I wouldn't call it the easy money because the people had to keep it. They did, you know, would it have sold? So for Mark saying easy money, I know what he means by that. But let me tell you, it's not easy holding something when the thing is going down and everyone's telling you it's going to zero, right? We had a demographer, one of the top demographers in the country here on the podcast last week, that, and like he said, he doesn't know a lot about Bitcoin, right? But the stuff that he was saying about it wasn't very healthy, right? But it's because he's not educated in it. So you got to take everything with a grain of salt, right? I'm committed to it. I've got conviction around Bitcoin. Now, I'm not selling every single property and, you know, my furniture and everything to go and dump it in, right? But I do have a certain allocation, definitely, in Bitcoin and Ethereum, right?
Yeah.
I've held Ethereum for a long time. Man, I've had more growth in Ethereum in the last 4 weeks than Ethereum has had since I've ever purchased it, right?
Yeah.
Now, does that mean I'm going to go and sell it now on the high because I think it's going to go down? I'm just holding. I just hold, you know? Whereas I was talking to a guy at a kid's function on the weekend who's looking at coming to Dubai. And he's like, I've got three mates. We look at 10 markers. We trade crypto, right? He's a finance guy. We trade crypto. We don't tell anyone what we're trading. We don't take other people's money. We literally just trade us three. And he goes, I'm averaging 50% a month. And that's the conviction he had.
You know,
he's like, 10 markers. That's all we go off. We got 10 markers. We compare them, we place our trades.
Keep it simple.
But again, you have to have the conviction in what you're doing, and you have to have the education on what you're doing, like what Mark is doing. Mark wasn't doing these types of trades 3 years ago when I first met him. Do you know what I mean? Like, now he's doing them and he's exposing them. You know, I wasn't as convicted in Bitcoin as I am now. But again, it's getting around people. It's being educated around a certain topic. And doing the work, right? Listening to the pods,
yeah,
right? Reading the books. But again, it's taking the action, right? Like James said, what are you waiting for? Just pull the trigger, right? I'm pulling multiple triggers. But to be honest with you, I can create an excuse and say I haven't pulled the trigger on that yet because I don't have time. I've got plenty of time. But there's just so much headspace you can have in certain things to go bang, 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 right? And in the season that I'm at the moment, there's so much growth in what we're doing with Unemployable that there's a couple of things that have sat on the sidelines, which I know shouldn't happen, but I'm okay with it because the trigger will be pulled. And again, like Mark said, one thing I got from that, Mark, is don't compare yourself and your innings to someone else's and where you are in your kind of investment and wealth creation journey, because we're all at different points. Mark's at a different 100%. Point than I am. I'm at a different point than Mark. Same with James. Same with Perry. Same with Adam. Anyone else? Like in our WhatsApp group, we have some heavy, heavy hitters in there that are doing massive things, massive trades, like trades that I'm like, my sphincter tightens up when I hear with some of the stuff that these guys are doing. But then their sphincter tightens up when they hear some of the stuff that I'm doing in the property space. But for me, I've got conviction. I believe in it, and I've been educating myself with it so much that I'm comfortable with it, but it'll make someone else much more uncomfortable, and that's okay. But you got to choose your poison.
Yeah, 100%. It doesn't matter how old I've been since I started working a job. I reckon, like from early 20s, I've always kind of looked at, okay, what's my wagon wheel of net wealth? How much am I earning per year? And for this stage in my life, what am I comfortable allocating to property? What am I comfortable allocating to my cars? What am I comfortable allocating to shares? What am I comfortable allocating to business? And I'm doing this consistently every single year. I'm looking at that even more often than that. And I'm saying, okay, you know, I'm comfortable allocating this much to options or this much to my e-com business, right? Like I don't mind sharing it. I think my Bitcoin position is only about 10% of my net wealth. Then I've got another 10% in Metaplanet, which is a Bitcoin treasury company. And then everything else is in other things. I've got property and I'm trading and I've got my business and I've got different things that I'm doing because I still see myself in a high growth phase, right? Where I want to try, if Bitcoin is going to go up by 40% a year, I want to try and do better than that. Like Eric's mates are doing 50% a month. I definitely want to do better than 8 to 15% a year in property, which is why 2 years ago I sold all my investment properties, right? And so really understanding where you are in your life and what is the percentage compounded gain that you need to make per year to get to your goal, to your end goal of where you want to be. Well, these are important questions, right? The majority of people out there that are making decisions to put all their money into Bitcoin or to transfer the super into this or to invest into that shitcoin or haven't done that work. And that's the first step. The first step is doing that work and working out, well, where do you want to get? What do you need to compound? What rate do you need to compound out per year to get there? And then working backwards and then working out, okay, what decisions do I need to make or what things do I need to work to learn in order to compound at that rate, right? You know, my compounding rate is much more aggressive. I want to outperform Bitcoin. I want to double Bitcoin's CAGR, right? Mm. Eric might want to do Bitcoin and a half, right? Like James might just want to do Bitcoin's CAGR. Like it just depends on what your objectives are. And then you have to work backwards from there. Otherwise you're literally pissing in the dark. Yeah. And you're just taking punts and you're gambling.
But that's why we're doing opportunities like this Dubai trip, because it's something different, right? Most people just invest in a 5 kilometer radius of where they live and they think that's the only thing they can do, right? Like, all right, let's go over there. Let's see what opportunities there are. Let's see what kind of payment terms there are, right? Make that decision for yourself, right? But there's opportunities there. I've got friends there that are making more money than God. And I'm like, well, I want to know how. How are you guys doing this, right? Like, what do you mean you're getting these returns? What do you mean there's that capital growth? But straight away, it's like, oh, is it too late? Oh, it's this, oh, it's that. But again, it's getting in the room. And for any of you guys that are listening to this, we've just launched today. So we record these Friday pods on Tuesday, and then our regular pods on Tuesday go live on Tuesday. So we've just released the Dubai pod with Natalie. And if you guys are interested in learning more about this Dubai trip that we're doing, the dates have been confirmed, October 23rd and 24th of this year. It's going to be a 2-day event. First day is going to be mainly around property, and second day around Bitcoin and crypto. There's going to be some amazing lunches and dinners, information sessions, as well as beach club, food, drinks. Go to www.unemployable.com.au/Dubai. Register your details there and you'll get a lot more information if you guys aren't listening to the Tuesday pod. Anything you want to add, Perry?
Yeah, I wanted to just pull in someone quickly, someone who's flown in from Thailand and has just landed in my living room. Come here, mate.
I think I know who this is.
It's the headline. Trackers King.
Yeah, how's it going, lads?
Yeah, hey, how are you?
Yeah, Stuart's come here for a holiday, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
He was down the road for me, so I said, come up. And,
good.
Yeah, we're going to chop him up into pieces and get rid of him.
I think we need to be a bit more of a formal intro. Not many people know this guy's mug. So who's Stuart and what does he do for Unemployable? And you'll probably then, every time you see a video, you'll think of this guy.
Go on, Stuart.
So basically, I'm hand in hand with Perry, we've built this from the ground up, basically. So the biggest thing that we do is harness attention to get as many people interested in the stuff that we have at Unemployable, to get as many views as possible in a very competitive landscape. And we play an attention game. So we try to do as much as we can through shorts and content to provide value for people, to get them interested in our content, and through time build an audience and build a brand for Unemployable.
So in layman's terms, you get a long YouTube video, a video like this, cut it up, grab the snippets out of it, they're going to grab the attention, and that's the stuff everyone gets to view on YouTube and draws their
With the thumbnails, headlines, just anything that's going to basically package things in a way that's going to get people to click through. Because again, like you're saying, it's an attention. We're in an attention economy right now.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the basics, you're going to get eaten alive these days. That's why people just fall to the wayside. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually want to say one thing for people that are watching right now. Don't forget to hit subscribe to Unemployable. Always hit subscribe so that we can keep providing content like this for you guys. Always.
Yeah. And for anyone that wants to know more about Stuart. Or when getting in contact with Stuart, just go to www.forgetaboutit because he works for us and no one else. All right, he's our secret weapon.
Forgetaboutit.com.
Don't worry about it.
Brilliant,
awesome
guys. All right, guys, that's a wrap up. A little bit different without Adam here. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed it. It's definitely not as in sync it is with Adam. He's definitely got a. Superpower, but hopefully you guys enjoyed this one and got some value out of it. Yeah. Thanks for showing up, Stu. Awesome work. Thanks, Perry.
Cheers, guys.
Appreciate it. See you, bye.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.